You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today I want to hit a number of stories, but kind of combine them together into one. The news is, and this is disturbing news for many Republicans, especially those in the establishment, is if you look at the poll numbers for Donald Trump, both the most recent polls as well as the trend since he got into the race, the trend is up, up, and up. And what disturbs, I think, the Republican establishment is he's widening his lead amongst all of the candidates that are running for president by a very wide margin. He's roughly double the nearest contender, which is Ben Carson, who appears to be not suspending his campaign, but promoting a book, going around the country at bookstores, signing books, and that's fine. But I thought he was running for president. I don't think that's evidence that he's a serious contender. Because if you're running for president, what should be on your mind is, how do I get elected president? Not how do I sell more books? So I'm a little bit disturbed that Ben Carson has decided to not suspend his campaign, but to focus on book sales. At least that's the impression that's given to the base. I don't think that's going to help him, especially if Donald Trump now has a lead that's more than double Ben Carson's numbers. And that's maybe why Ben Carson has such... He's definitely in second place. He's leading everybody else. But the front runner by far is Donald Trump. Maybe he's decided there's no way he can catch him. If that's the case, then I think he should do the right thing and pull out. He's not going to do that because I think he knows he's made significant progress, significant inroads with the American people. You see, one of the problems I had, not with Ben Carson, but with Donald Trump was he serious? Was he running as a spoiler like Perot did when he ran? He was a spoiler because, remember, the contest was between then-President George H.W. Bush, I call him Daddy Bush, Bill Clinton, and him. And initially, Ross Perot was winning. In other words, if you looked at the polls, Ross Perot was in the lead. He was beating not only Clinton, but also President Bush. Then he decided to get out. I think he decided to get out because he really didn't want to be president. Why, he wanted to make sure that George Bush didn't get a second term for his own personal reasons. He decided, and that was his objective. He never, my conclusion is, he never wanted to be president. So he got out, and then he got back in. Why? Because he got a lot of criticism from his supporters that were putting a lot of effort, a lot of time, money into supporting him. He got back in, but by at that point, the damage was done, and Clinton won. The rest, as they say, is history. Even with that, and here's why Ross Perot was successful, he got nearly 19% of the vote. Much, not all of that vote, but a lot of that vote would have gone to Bush. And people have examined where Ross Perot was getting the numbers. It's not clear he was a spoiler, even though he got 19% of the vote. The point I'm trying to make is the American people don't like people that play with them. Matter of fact, they deeply resent it. To this day, I maintain, had Ross Perot not gotten out of the race that first time, he probably would have been president. We wouldn't have had a Bill Clinton. And today, we certainly would not have the candidacy of Hillary Clinton. So I still have that question mark over Trump. Now, over time, I've come to the conclusion that Donald Trump is serious. He wants to win. Like he says, I wouldn't be spending some of his money, not a lot, and wasting my time if I didn't want to win it. Makes sense to me, because it is time consuming and it obviously interferes with his business. So I now believe that Trump is not only a serious candidate, wants to win. And I don't see anybody stopping him, including Hillary Clinton. Trump has the money to self-finance. He doesn't need to go hat in hand to various donors that have the money that are more or less in the same position as Trump or multimillionaires. We're talking super rich here. We're not talking 1 or 2 million. We're talking people that have hundreds of millions of dollars, in some cases tens of billions of dollars, where $1 billion is 1,000 million. Trump doesn't need to do that. He knows that it's done because over the years, where he was successful, and now he's very, very successful. Politicians, both Democrats and Republicans, have come to him in the past seeking his support. And by support, they mean money, a check. And Trump has given to both parties. No secret about that. Because he's in a business that he needs to make sure that the politicians support his various construction projects. So as far as the primaries are concerned, Trump has made it very, very clear that he's financing it. He doesn't need anyone's money, is not accepting money from the big donor class. Now, obviously, if people are making small campaign contributions, he probably is accepting that. In other words, he doesn't want people to give him money because they want something. They first want access, but more importantly, they want something. And when people give you a large check, we're talking hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, they want something and expect something. He doesn't want that. So that makes him a very, very attractive candidate compared to all the other candidates, because all the other candidates have to go hat in hand and get the donors to write those checks to their super PACs, as well as the PACs and their own campaign and the Republican Party or Democratic Party, depending on what the candidate's party affiliation is. Now, I bring this up because I need to briefly review, and I've done this a number of times, but right now it even makes more sense. If you truly want to be president of the United States, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, you got to have what I call mama. You need money, you need organization, you need a message, you need momentum, and you need ambition. I'm going to skip organization for a minute. Obviously, Trump has the money. Obviously, he has the message. But it's not enough to have a message or a stump speech that you give over and over again, and that's what Trump is doing. That's what all the candidates do. Trump's a little bit challenged because he gets so much free publicity from the various networks. They cover every one of his events, and they appear on YouTube, either cut down to the key parts or the entire presentation. So he needs to at least give the appearance of changing his stump speech, and he does, because he's not reading from a teleprompter. He's not really reading from notes, even though he pulls out some paper. He's really speaking off the cuff, like I am right now. I don't have an outline. I don't have a script. I know generally what I want to talk about, but I don't know what I'm going to say. It's very much stream of conscious, but a very aimed at something. And that's what he's doing. And he typically goes about 45 minutes to an hour. Sometimes he takes questions from the audience. It depends on the size, the venue, whether it's appropriate or not. And usually either before or after the event, he takes questions from the press. And that's what a serious candidate does. And you literally have to go state after state. Now, the focus early on is in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. Those are the early primaries or caucus states. But in March, you have, I think it's 13 states have their primaries. And that brings me the money. You need the money to buy the time on radio and television networks to broadcast your message. And that means you have to prepare commercial ads, political campaign ads, that will run both on television as well as radio prior to the primary date. Usually 7 to 10 days, sometimes if you have the money, 2 weeks prior, you'll have concentrated ads. And it varies from where these ads are run. because the timing is different. The primary is why there are a lot of them in February. You need it. The timing is important. The scheduling is important. You need the money to buy all that time. And you need to, in advance, like right now, prepare those ads. Because they need to be ready to run starting in February and March. And it goes into April and May and June. And that's why many of the candidates won't be around in March. They don't have the money, and they know it. So these early poll numbers where people are doing 2, 3, 4, 5, even 8 or 9%, well, that's nice, but that's an also-ran. Because if that's all you can get in the polls, how much money do you think you're going to attract? The answer is not much. Because people are looking at you and trying to make a determination, do you have a chance at all? If I write the big checks, like I said, millions of dollars of checks, and get my executives that work for me to write the checks, and my friends, the so-called donor class, they're going to want something. And it's more than access, folks. Access is just the minimum. When they come in for the meeting, the appointment, they're going to make it very clear as to what they want. It might be a tax law change, a regulation change, a new law, or you support keeping an existing law. There'll be a whole range of things that they want, but that's what people with money do. They buy influence. They buy politicians, whether it's in the House, the Senate, or the candidates that are running for president. And they're not going to give their money where they know that the person has little or no chance of getting the nomination. Now, we still have the rest of October, November, December, and January, a little over 100 days before the first primary in Iowa. And the following week, and that's the 1st of February, then the following week, I think it's the 7th or 8th, New Hampshire, and then South Carolina, and then in March you have those, I believe, 13 primaries in other states, including Texas. So you're going to have some big, big states such as Texas in March. And Texas being a big state means you have to be in a number of media markets. Obviously, I'm in Dallas, so it's the Dallas-Fort Worth market. You need to be in Houston, and there are others. East Texas, West Texas, North Texas, South Texas, and that's why it's expensive. You need to be both on the radio, and you definitely need to be on television. And if you're smart, you need to be in talk radio. Today, I listened to a lot of talk radio, really to see people's style, see what questions people are asking, what's on people's mind, the people that call in, as well as what the talk show host is emphasizing. And on the Mark Davis Show, usually between 7:30 and 8 o'clock, they have Mike Gallagher on just to give a preview of what he's going to have on his show at 10 o'clock. Now, it caught my attention. He said, well, Donald Trump is going to be on my radio show. Well, he was. Not for long, about, I think, maybe 10 or 12 minutes tops. But I'm pointing this out, Donald Trump is doing the smart thing. He is going to the various talk shows, such as Hugh Hewitt, such as Mike Gallagher. I've not heard him on Rush Limbaugh's show, but I don't listen to everyday Rush Limbaugh, so he could have been on it. I know he's been on the Michael Savage show. I'm pointing this out because Romney wouldn't do it. And if you want to know, one reason I think he lost is a lot of conservatives, a lot of libertarians, a lot of independents that are not Republicans listen to talk radio. I thought that was a serious mistake. I know why he didn't want to do it, because he was going to get some rough questions, some tough questions, not necessarily rough questions. And he had to be able to answer them, and decided he didn't want to put up with that. You have to take risk. In any campaign, you got to take risk. You got to get out there. You got to be known. Now, Donald Trump is known. Some of the other candidates, people have never heard of him, especially in Texas. If you're an East Coast governor or former governor, most people here don't know anything about you, don't even know your name. There's no name recognition. Donald Trump does not have that problem. He has name recognition, and he is attracting a lot of people, and that is driving the Republican establishment crazy. It's also, I think, driving the Democratic establishment crazy, but they're not talking about it. And what's happening is the media, mainly the television networks, as well as Fox, have fairly consistently gone after Trump, even though Trump will go on their networks. He views it as an opportunity, as I would. You want to take the tough questions. You want to know what questions are they asking. And obviously, you need to be prepared to answer them. It makes you better, and Donald Trump understands that. And that's difficult for any candidate to do because the temptation is just to avoid them. You know they're not your friends. They're trying to sink your candidacy. They're gunning for you. But to the extent that you have the intestinal fortitude, that's another word for guts, and are prepared, even if they try to rough you up or give you questions that really are, as far as I'm concerned, ridiculous, you grin and you answer the questions. And if they're out of line, maybe you won't come back. What Donald Trump has had to endure is most of the press, I won't say all, but most of the press, and I'm including television, radio, as well as print, have been gunning for Mr. Trump. I was in the newsroom where they're preparing the Richland Chronicle paper, and apparently they're taking one of these pro-con type editorial comments, opinion piece, on Trump. I'm always curious about that because many people, especially young students, don't do their homework. They don't know much about Donald Trump. They just give their opinion, a rather uninformed opinion, and it shows. And frankly, I don't read those pieces. Now, other students may, if they're friends, or we're talking college students here. I bring it up for the simple reason right now, there hasn't been an election anywhere. We're a little over 3.5 months to the first election, over 100 days. That's the only thing that counts. I say that because if you want the nomination of the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the only thing that counts is you have the majority of delegates. And you better believe not only is the press or so-called mainstream media against Donald Trump, so is the establishment of the Republican Party. Now, they have to go through the motions of being fair. We don't favor any candidates. But you know, the Republican establishment does not want Donald Trump to be the Republican nominee. They were counting on Jeb Bush being the nomination. However, Jeb Bush is very quickly being counted out. Still has money, and I think will still be around definitely after March. But if he loses his own home state of Florida, and I think that will be the decisive event. And right now, Donald Trump is beating both Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio in their home state of Florida. That's why Donald Trump is surging. He's surging because he's attracting people that have had it with both political parties, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Now, some still consider themselves Democrats, some still consider themselves Republicans, but a large percentage of the people that will be voting, and when I say large percentage, 40 to 50%, probably around 45%, are independents. In other words, they're not registered as a Republican, nor are they registered a Democrat. Why? They've had it with the parties. They don't like the direction both parties have gone, namely further and further to the left. And that's seen in the fact that we have a large warfare and welfare state, bigger and bigger governments, a national debt that'll be over $20 trillion by the time Obama leaves. They're concerned, and they should be concerned. In terms of the number of people employed, and I'm not talking the official U3 unemployment rate, but if you look at the U6 rate and then look at the labor participation and the fact that it hasn't been this low since 1977, of the roughly 95 million people that are out of the labor force, at least 20 to 30 million would come back into the labor force if they could find a decently paid job. Let's take the lower bounds. Let's say it's just 20 million. If you add that, it doesn't make any difference to the U3 number or the U6 number. I believe the U3 number is 8 million. I haven't had time to do the calculations for the U6, but it's at least 12 to 14 would be my educated guess. Here's the point I'm driving at. During the Great Depression, the worst year of the Great Depression was 1933. The unemployment rate estimated by the Department of Labor, and you need to understand, they didn't have these statistics then. The Department of Labor statistics that you hear every month really didn't start until 1948. But there have been estimates of what was the unemployment rate during the Great Depression, and when did it hit its high? It hit its high in 1933, around March, and that was the month that FDR took the oath of office. Franklin Roosevelt took the oath of office. But it was 24.9%. And that meant that there were slightly less than 13 million people unemployed. Today, when you add up the unemployed people, the official headline number, and add the people that are either part-timers because they can't find full-time jobs, as well as those 20 to 30 million that are now out of the labor force, and they're considered out of the labor force because they haven't looked in the last 4 weeks. If you add that back up, the number of people unemployed today is more than twice the number of people unemployed during the Great Depression. I'm giving this for context for a minute because I'm trying to make a point here. Have you seen many news reports on this? No. Why aren't people lined up for food? Well, the reason why they're not lined up, we have nearly 50 million people on food stamps. Now, about half of those people are children. The other half are their parents or adults, which is 25 million. They don't have money to buy food. Now, some do. A lot of people take advantage of what I'm calling food stamps. Today, it's a SNAP card. It's not stamps. It's a card. It's referred to as SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Program, Assistance Program. SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And you've seen them at the cash register. They swipe their card when they check out. And if you don't look carefully, you won't even notice it. And it was designed to be that way. There's no stigma today. So people are not going hungry. And the point I'm trying to make is what's different now than then is the fact that we have many welfare programs, the so-called safety net. What we're not paying attention to, mainly because the mainstream media does not want to call attention to this situation because their guy, the progressive guy, Barack Obama, is president. But that's the reality, folks. In terms of number of people unemployed, for whatever reason, the sheer numbers are roughly at least twice what the Great Depression was. Now, I know the population is a lot larger, and that's why there's more. You can't believe this 5.1% unemployment rate, because when the labor participation rate, that if we were in a normal situation where the economy is growing, booming, the labor participation rate should be at least 66% and really over 67%. It has been at that level during both Clinton and Bush. And for most of Bush, it was between 66 and 67% until we got in the recession that started in December of 2007 and lasted to June of 2009. And then what happens? The labor participation rate goes down, and the number of the people not in the labor force goes up. And that's exactly what has happened. It is at record levels and getting worse. Now, I hope it doesn't go over 100 million, but it's gradually getting there. And I sure hope that we have reached a peak in terms of SNAP or food stamps. In other words, I hope it doesn't go over 50 million. Welfare is not free. Taxpayers that are working pay for that welfare program, whatever that program is, whether it's SSI, security income payments, a welfare check, or Section 8 housing, or an earned income credit. They're all welfare programs, and people are living on that. People that were working that were laid off initially live off of their unemployment, what they get in terms of unemployment each month. Today, what's different is we pay people not to work. That's what we're doing, and we're making people very much dependent on government. And as a result, the size and the scope of the federal government is dramatically increased. In 1900, if you looked at all levels of government, local, city, county, state, federal, combined, consisted about 10% of expenditures. Today, it's over 30%. It's about 35%. It's growing. Government over that 114-year period, especially during times of war, World War I, World War II, Korean War, Vietnam, as well as the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, government in periods of war tend to grow and expand and ratchet upwards. Now, after the war's over, it tends to go down. But war means money is not spent on increasing consumer expenditures. It largely goes to those goods and services that are needed to fight a war. Aircraft, armament, bullets, rifles, pistols, you name it. Food for the soldiers, clothing for the soldiers. So because of this over a century of the size of the government getting bigger and bigger, and now we have very much a military-industrial complex that President Eisenhower warned about, a large chunk of our economy, a large chunk of the federal budget, now less than 20%. It used to be as high as 50% before the welfare programs, as well as certain entitlement programs such as Medicare came in. The point I'm trying to make is government has gotten bigger and bigger, and you got to pay for government. Initially, it's paid by taxes. And then when we don't have enough taxes, it's paid by going into debt. And that's where we are today. The American people are overtaxed. But in addition to that, we're increasingly going into debt. I was looking at the monthly Treasury statement that's put out by the Department of Treasury. I wanted to see, had they published the September report, which includes the end of the fiscal year. They haven't done it, even though right on their website it says normally it's published the eighth business day. Well, we're past the eighth business day. It's not published. I'm not surprised because I've been through this. Usually it's the third or fourth weeks before the Treasury Department actually puts out a number. But I won't keep you in suspense. The deficit, in other words, we spent more money than we took in from all sources, all tax revenue collections. We spent $589 billion. That's with a B, billion, where a billion is $1,000 million. In other words, that's over $500 billion. Now, that number is subject to change. It could go up, it could go down, it could stay roughly where it is. And we'll know by the end of the month at the very latest what the deficit was. It's a huge number, folks, a huge number. Now, it's better than when Barack Obama entered the White House. His first year, the deficit was over $1,400 billion. In other words, $1.4 trillion. And the next year is $1.3 trillion, then slightly under $1.3. So it has been gradually going down and leveling off. It looks like the fiscal year that just ended, 2015, we're going to be at somewhere between $500 and $600 billion. Not good. Actually bad. But not if you put it in the context again. Why is it bad? Running every year now, deficit after deficit after deficit. Remember, at least for a couple of years in the Clinton administration, but largely due to the Republicans controlling Congress, we actually had a surplus. Not anymore. The primary reason I'm not a Republican anymore is under George W. Bush, he started running up these massive deficits. Now, I know we're going after Al-Qaeda, the war on terror. Well, the war on terror is open-ended, folks. That's like the war on poverty. We're still fighting the war on poverty. We're still fighting the war on drugs. We're still fighting the war on terror. That's why they use that phrase. It's open-ended. It's unending. We're always at war. We're still at war. In terms of poverty, we're still at war and trying to end drugs. We're still at war of terror. It's never going to end. That's why I say we are today, the United States has become a warfare and welfare state. And what you need to understand, it doesn't matter whether Democrats win or the Republicans win. They're both big government parties. But why is it bad when we run these massive deficits, which the only way you can pay for this is to borrow money? And that's what we've been doing. And that's why the national debt will be approximately 20 when Obama leaves office in January of 2017. I can't wait. Because it burdens not only the people that are living today, but the people, your children, your grandchildren, and unborn generations. Most of this spending is not invested. It's consumed. For example, transfer payments for food stamps or SNAP cards. That money came from one group of people, and governments use the power of taxation, use coercion to take money from people and give it to someone else. And that someone else now is very much dependent on government. That's not the way it should be, and it's not the way it was for most of the history of the United States. It's really been the last 70 to 85 years, roughly, that the government, its size, its scope, has vastly expanded. And both parties are guilty of it. But first and foremost, it's the American people. The American people put these people in office. So as much as I'm critical of what's going on, it's not going to change unless the American people decide that what they're doing is wrong, very wrong. Shame on them. They're not doing the right thing. Yet we have in the Democratic Party, and we sort in the debates, well, I'm going to give you this, I'm going to give you that, I'm going to give you a free college education, I'm going to give you free this, free that. That's beyond irresponsible. That's wrong. There's no free lunch, because to the extent you give someone something, you're taking from somebody else, you're stealing, you're using the power of the government to steal from one person or group of people and give it to another because you think it's right. Who are you to think it's right? Do you think that's fair? You know, the word I hate because it's very misleading. We have a maldistribution of income. Well, first of all, income is not distributed. People earn their income by working. The problem is the government is the problem. Reagan was absolutely right. If anything, he understated it. Government is not only a problem, it is a direct threat to your liberty, to the survival of this republic. The Roman Empire lasted for hundreds of years, but the Republic of Rome did not. And it did not because what happened? Rome expanded its empire, and that required, yes, military spending. And what did the Roman legions do? By force, made sure that tribute flowed to Rome. We don't have a Roman Empire, but we have an empire. We have bases, hundreds of them, all over the globe. In the Middle East, in Africa, Asia. We have a large standing Army, Air Force, Navy, and Marines. All that cost money, and it's used supposedly to protect the national interest of the United States and its people. This is a problem area. There are people in the Republican Party and the establishment, especially the neoconservatives, but they're not the only one, that want to dramatically expand military spending. Also, in the Democratic Party, there are people that want to expand welfare, entitlement spending. So we have the problem both in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. I say to both of them, have you looked at the financial situation of the United States? We're in essence broke. We're deadbeats. We're going bankrupt. We will be like Greece in 10 to 15 years. I'm not optimistic at all, because if you objectively look at the situation today in terms of employment, it's worse than the Great Depression. The only reason why you're not seeing it on television is partly the fact that we have a progressive Democrat in the White House, and most of the media don't want to embarrass him. Don't want to point out some of the obvious things. Now, if it were a Republican, you would see every day stories about the homeless, the people on food stamps, people that have lost their houses, the people that cannot find jobs. And that will happen if a Republican is elected. And let me remind you, I'm not a Republican or Democrat. I've given up on the Democrats for the simple reason, and you saw it at the debate. There's no conception here of limits. And the fact that we have exceeded those limits, we've gone way over the line, the red line, and it's going to come crashing down, and it's going to result in another depression. Not a recession, depression. The debt bomb will go off. Why? As debt gets a bigger and bigger percentage of the federal budget, it slowly but surely squeezes out department budgets and then defense, welfare, and entitlement programs. And it's only a matter of time before that happens. I think the outside limit is about 2030. In other words, we don't have much time to seriously address and put our fiscal house in order. So if you ask me why Donald Trump is surging, people have put their faith in him to make America great again, because they know it's not great anymore. They know it. They have friends or relatives, or maybe themselves, that have been unemployed. Some have been lucky to have found jobs, but it's part-time and low-paid jobs. And poll after poll has showed the American people believe we're going in the wrong direction. And they're deserting both political parties, because we have a two-party tyranny today. Both parties believe in huge, massive government warfare and welfare programs and more entitlements. You'll hear it on the left, you'll hear it on the right, and you'll hear it from the moderates. They don't want to confront reality. They don't want to face reality. It would be difficult. I'll be the first one to say, to get us out of this mess is not going to be easy. And I'm waiting to hear from Donald Trump, how is he going to get us out of this mess? Oh, I believe he wants to make America great. So do I. But how? Because what has to happen is budgets have to be cut. Departments have to be closed. Programs have to be ended. And I'm talking permanently. In other words, downsizing of the federal government. That's not popular, folks. And it'll be fought every inch by the bureaucrats and politicians of the establishment in Washington, D.C., of both parties. If you don't believe me, listen to talk radio. There are people on talk radio that I call Republican talk radio. They want to intervene in country after country, and they want a terrific expansion of our military and weapons acquisitions, carriers, submarines, you name it. When I know, you know, there's not a nation on this planet that can defeat us. Oh, Russia and China are a threat, and that's who they'll point to. We gotta worry about Russia. We gotta worry about China. Well, I'm concerned about both of them. You see, the attitude of the big government parties is intervention, both domestically in the economy as well as abroad. The only difference between the two parties is where they want to spend your money. Your money. Who do they want to give it to? Is it welfare recipients? Is it defense contractors? Is it the bureaucracy, the people that work in the government? You see, I can remember when I was in the Air Force that if you wanted security, you could become what's called a civil servant. You could work for the government. And at that time, they made less, but you got security. Not anymore. Today, they make more than their civilian counterparts, both in salaries and in benefits. And if you go to the state level, that's a problem. Go to California. Go to Illinois, controlled by the Democratic Party. They're in financial problem. It's not just the national level. It's also at the state level and the city and county level. Government has become a cancer. And you always have to remember wealth, income, and jobs are created in the private sector. They're not created in the public sector. Largely what goes on in the public sector is transfer payments from the taxpayers to some other group that's supposedly needy. And the emphasis on education. I'm sitting on a junior college. I call community colleges babysitting indoctrination centers. That's the first 2 years of college. What you'll find there is about one-third of the people attending can't read. Another third can read but don't read. And about a third can read and do read. Now, here's the statistic that'll shock you. Less than 1 out of 4 people actually gets a degree. And it's not unique to Dallas. It's statewide. It's countrywide. And Obama and Hillary Clinton and Bernie, oh, they want to have a free education. What are they doing? They're trying to keep you off the streets. That's what all this is about. I say to myself, the taxpayers pay for 12 years of a public or government education. Yet we have too many people, after 12 years, cannot read or write or communicate. The only thing they're good for is what we're importing workers from Mexico and Central America. Manual labor, low income. Manual labor. I have nothing against manual labor. I've done it. But those are very much entry-level jobs where you have very little skill or experience. You see, the big government types always like to refer to market failure. It's a market failure. What they don't talk about are government failures. And it's on parade. Look at the school systems across the country. I know there's some very good ones, but there are many more poor ones. And now we want to spend more money so everyone can have a college education when everyone doesn't. And only 1 out of 4 actually graduates. Now, in some districts, some states, it's better, a little better. And some, it's actually worse, 1 out of 5. But who's paying for this? You are. I am. And now we want to make it free? You subsidize anything, what are you going to do? You're going to get more students that can't read or can read and don't want to read. They don't want to be here. They don't like it. Imagine you enroll a full-time student. A full-time course load in any college today is 5 courses. And that means every week you usually have at least a chapter to read. So that's 5 chapters times 30 pages. Imagine if you can't read. You're not going to make it through. And they don't. They obviously don't. And the people that can are not reading. It doesn't matter. They're taking 5 courses. So what happens? They flunk out. They don't make it through. That's why only 1 in 4 gets the degree. We want to subsidize more of this? Give me a break. That's a luxury we can't afford. The same applies to defense. We're in deep denial, folks. And if we don't get our fiscal act together, we're due, really overdue, for another depression. And oh yes, we have all those welfare programs. Can't be that bad. Well, when you're broke, what do you think is going to be the first thing they're going to start cutting? Government programs, including welfare programs. Because slowly what happens is this. As the debt gets bigger and bigger, interest rates will go up. Up, up, and up. And that just squeezes more and more and more. You see, government has to radically downsize if this nation is going to survive. Yet both political parties are going in the opposite direction. They're denying that reality. So Trump is surging. Clinton is sinking in the polls. And after October 22nd, we'll see how far she's going to sink. The Democrats are all for socializing. They're into Santa Claus socialism. We're going to give you this. We're going to give you that. They're trying to bribe you. They're trying to addict you, make you dependent on them, and make you vote for them. You got to vote for them if we're going to give you stuff. They are socialists and they are communists, and it doesn't work. Now, what are the Republicans doing? They're squandering. The people turned to the Republicans in 2010, 2012, 2014, gave them control of the House, gave them control of the Senate, and what are they doing? They're squandering that. They're not leading. They're deferring to a president that is shrinking, shrinking, shrinking. He's not a leader. He's a follower. He's a liar, too. And they're afraid of him. They won't take him on. Don't say anything or we'll lose the election. The American people are crying out for leadership. That's why Donald Trump is surging in the polls. Because the people are fed up with the Republican Party and the Democratic Party and the leadership. And they know that the leadership of those parties that are really followers are taking this country not only in the wrong direction, but into another Great Depression. And it will happen. Because if we don't have a leader that turns it around, it's guaranteed to happen. Because the debt will get bigger and bigger, the interest payments will get bigger and bigger, and all budgets will be squeezed. And then the people that lend money to the United States will demand higher and higher and higher interest rates because we're a risk. We have a rather low credit score, put it in personal terms. Now I'm looking at the time, I do have to wrap it up. And the people are on strike in the sense that they don't want where we're going. They deep down understand what I'm saying, that what we're doing is fundamentally wrong. It's not the right thing to do. It's the wrong thing to do. And we are burdening future generations. But we are hurting a lot of people that don't and can't find a good job, don't have a job. And that's somewhere between 20 and 30 million minimum. It could be much higher. So we'll see whether Donald Trump becomes the next president or someone else, such as Hillary Clinton, can beat him. I doubt it. Because objectively, she's committed crimes. And ultimately, that will catch up to her. She might get nominated, and she might even make it to the presidency. In other words, make it to the White House. But what comes around goes around, and I don't think that's going to happen. She's not a leader. I think she'll be worse than Obama, and he's pretty bad, because I think he's one of the worst presidents we've ever had, and Hillary is no better. So we need to pray for our country and hope that more and more Americans wake up and confront reality, face reality, and then decide, who do you want to lead this country? It's not going to be an easy choice, but if you're going to make it on identity politics, in other words, well, it's a woman, it's a black. That's not the way to make this decision. Is the person capable of leading a very massive government? And where does he want to lead it? That is the question. And that's the question you're going to have to get an answer to from all the candidates that are running. Hopefully, by February, we only have maybe 6 or 8 to really consider. And by the end of March, we'll probably be down to 2 to 4. I think Trump, given the fact he has the money, the organization, the message, the momentum, and the ambition, he wants to be president. I think he's going to be our next president. In other words, the job is his to lose. So if he truly wants the job, I think he's going to get the job. I just hope he's up to it, because this is a job that is the most challenging in the world. And most people simply are not up to it. And many simply do not grow in the office. Many shrink in size like President Obama. With that, let me play my favorite song, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com.